If it's sports and you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. 96.5, The Cave.
Leon, why are you playing the MSU fight song? They lost by like 50 on Saturday, and you're done talking about them. No, we're not. It's a brand new segment here inside the cave on Wednesdays. We'd like to make this a regular thing. We're going to try it out today. I have on the line for 24/7 Sports, Stephen Brooks, the MSU insider. Good morning, Mr. Brooks. How are we doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. So, what's going on? like, where do you even start with the season the Spartans have had?
I start with the preseason, the off season. I mean, because look, what we're seeing is, to be honest, and not to pat myself on the back or anything, but I mean, what we're seeing is, and I'm not the only one that identified this, but what we're seeing is the major question marks, the biggest issues, you know, potential issues on each side of the ball have become real issues. You know, what I'm saying is, you know, the offensive line specifically on that side of the ball was a major, major concern and question mark. That hasn't panned out. And that's why, you know, they've rushed for less than 100 combined yards these last two games. On the other side, the secondary, as we all knew last year, that was a concern. That was a weakness. And did they do enough to address that this offseason? And, you know, could those guys just get better, you know? And so far that answer is no. So there were glaring, potential weaknesses, as I said, on both sides of the ball coming into this year. And now four games in, they look like serious, major, you know, concerning questions.
And Stephen, this is John Roberts, co-hosting with Ian this morning. You hear now that the defensive coordinator he thinks it's the scheme is good. So are we tweaking some things? Are we talking maybe? Are you hearing anything about maybe some personnel changes to better fit that system defensively?
Yeah, so last week they switched their nickel back, and, you know, because Mel Tucker's been saying since the Washington game, you know, that they would be evaluating scheme and personnel. All that really turned into last week was a different nickel back with Justin White in for Chester Kimbrough. The thing is, just the way they're constructed right now, I don't know how many other personnel moves they really have to make. I mean, because they really just have no safety depth. With Xavier Henderson being out since week one, I don't expect him back yet this week. So, you know, when he comes back, maybe they could play with some things and move him, obviously move him back in there and maybe move Angelo Gross around, maybe back to the nickel where he was pretty good as a true freshman in 2020, and then maybe play Kendall Brooks as the other safety, the guy who stepped in for Xavier Henderson. But other than that, I mean, you'd be turning to like a true freshman and Jaden Mangum back there at one of the safety spots. I don't know if they're ready to do that yet. Corners, their top four kind of are their top four with Amir Speed, Chuck Brantley, Ronald Williams, and Marquis Lowry. We did see more of Ronald Williams last week than we ever have this at any point this season, so maybe that's something. But there's just, in terms of personnel in the secondary, I don't think there's a lot of buttons they can press right now. Now, that being said, I do think that there's a lot more buttons to press when it comes to scheme and just their approach to things. Now, I don't know exactly what they're going to do, but I do think, you know, I thought they went out to Washington with a bad plan, quite honestly, you know, and I didn't think they adjusted mid-game very well. And and last week, you know, kind of was what it was. That I thought they had a decent approach schematically, but they just, you know, Minnesota just leaned on them, you know, and by that second half, they were just getting pushed around up front, really couldn't stop that run game. And that was after giving up some big plays in the passing game. So I do think that there's some different schematic things they could do. Whether they will do them, I don't know that yet. But I think that there's more that they could try, on that side of the ball for sure.
We're talking with Stephen Brooks, the Michigan State insider with 24/7 Sports. I know we dove into the issues with Michigan State. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Stephen, and your path to 24/7 Sports?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a, you know, Michigan homegrown guy, born and raised in Kalamazoo, went to Michigan State from 2010 to 2014, and Got my start at the student paper there, the State News, which was a great time and really an invaluable experience. Like I said, graduated 2014, went up to Owosso, worked at the Argus Press newspaper up there for a year. Then I went down to Indiana, worked at a paper in Goshen, Indiana, which is just outside of Elkhart, which is probably a better, you know, reference point for your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Worked there for 3 years, covering high schools and Notre Dame a little bit on the side, and then came back here and started covering Michigan State again in 2018. So this is my fourth football season. Or no, I'm sorry, fifth football season.
So you've been, yeah, I mean, you were there for the end of the D'Antonio era and the beginning of the Mel Tucker era. And that'll kind of lead into my next question. And I talked about it earlier in the show. It seems like we, Spartan Nation, and maybe the country, were we kind of hoodwinked by last year? Like, was Kenneth Walker III a Heisman candidate and the best tailback in the country, and that masked everything with the Spartans?
Not everything, but quite a bit, to be honest. I mean, yeah, he made an offense go with an offensive line, you know, that was average on their best day. You know, that he, that area specifically, he was able to mask some things. And if you go back and look at, you know, call up your five favorite Kenneth Walker runs, I bet at least, you know, I bet half of them, you know, weren't blocked very well. And he just made magic happen out of nothing, you know. So there was a lot of that. But, you know, he wasn't making these late defensive clutch plays, these pick sixes, these late fourth quarter stands and everything. You know, that was just a really gutty, resilient team that just had that it factor. You know, close games, they felt they were going to win, and they did win them. You know, so there was some intangible stuff going on with that team. Hoodwinks, you know, it was definitely an outlier. Like, and that's what I've tried to stress to people is, Mel Tucker had a job on his hands when he came in, as you guys know. I mean, like, the program wasn't in the best shape when D'Antonio left it. Now, I'm not saying it was at ground zero, you know, and they had to start from scratch, but it wasn't in great shape. It definitely wasn't in shape to compete with Ohio State and compete for titles the way Mel Tucker wants to do. So he had a long road ahead of him. And, you know, anybody who's watched college football for any length of time knows you don't go from 2 wins to 11 wins in year two of a rebuild. So that was absolutely the outlier. You know, what do you normally do? You go from 2 wins to maybe 6 to maybe 8 in year 3, 7, 8, 9, you know? And look, that's what they look to be on track to be. I picked them to go 8-4 this year. And, you know, maybe they're trending a hair below that now. But let's say they go, you know, 7-6 this year or win 8, you know, and have a chance at something in the bowl game. Like, that would be on par with a traditional year 3 of a rebuild. It's just that last year skewed expectations so much with a generational sort of talent like that, like you mentioned, that I think people started to expect too much too soon. And, I mean, look, Mel Tucker's being paid a lot of money to be very successful, and I get that, but he's sort of being paid that money for what can happen down the road. And when you look at the recruiting rankings, the recruiting class he signed last year, the commits he has this year, and even, you know, the two guys they have in the boat for the 2024 class, two cycles away, both four-star top 200 kids nationally, you know, there's evidence that this is going in the right direction. You know, and I've heard so much grumbling already about him and his contract, you know, through this 2-2 start, but it was never about just that season. It was always about where he could take this program, and where he could take this program is going to be determined by his recruiting efforts and where he can win and how fast he can really restock this thing with the type of talent necessary. So that's sort of where I stand on that. You know, 11-2 was the outlier. That doesn't happen in year twos of rebuilds. And when you think about a traditional year three, you know, you usually think, like I said, 7, 8, maybe 9 wins on the high end. And I think that's still on the table for this team and more realistic than, you know, back-to-back 11 wins.
Talking with Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports, the Michigan State insider. And for me on this show, being the only one that's the Spartan fan, you know, I caught a couple smiles from John Roberts, and I know, you know, everyone else on the Cave is like, oh, yeah, I mean, sure, Sparty talk, you know, look at these recruiting classes, blah, 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 you thought you were going to be great. So, man, this is tough. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm asking the question, Stephen, is it coaches, scheme, or players? I think that's what it boils down to me. Does it seem like it's all three? That's the problem, or one over the other, or am I way out on left field?
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to take the easy path, but I do think it is partly all three. I mean, look, you know, the recruiting classes have been promising, and again, like, that's a big reason why Tucker got that contract. But if you really break it down, his 2021 class, his first one, was, he had 1 week to meet face-to-face with kids before he signed those guys. And I think only maybe two or three kids that actually signed in that class ever met Tucker face-to-face in that 1 week. Everybody else was met, recruited, evaluated, and the whole class was assembled through Zoom, you know, through the pandemic year. So you almost, you know, what, I don't want to be too lenient on him, but I mean, like, you kind of understand, like, if that class doesn't fully pan out. And even that was higher ranked than, you know, than most of the end of the run D'Antonio classes. So you look at 2022, you know, this year's true freshman is really his first true class, the class where he is able to actually get out on the road and see people face to face and get into those homes, get into those schools. That was really the first real cycle of that. And so you're not really going to ask a bunch, you know, 20 true freshmen to come in and change your program, right? And that's where the transfer portal comes in. You're able to supplement and sort of build, you know, build the train tracks in front of you as the train's coming a little bit. 2023 looks like it'll be a better class than 2022, and 2024, you know, there's reason to believe that could be better than 23. So that's what has to happen here. You know, I mean, I get that the contract is what it is, and it puts pressure on Tucker and it makes him a target. But the fact is, like, you have to stack multiple years of recruiting classes to get this thing back right, because they stacked multiple years of bad recruiting classes near the end of the D'Antonio era. And they broomed a lot of those guys out, but and have tried to supplement with the transfer portal. And I think they've ended up on the right side of the ledger there, talent-wise, these last 2 years, there's no question, with who they lost and who they've added. But you still can't fully restock it that way and compete at the highest level of the Big Ten. So they're going to need to stack a few more of these classes together. And then, as I said, you know, so the current talent, specifically on the offensive line, I think is not where it needs to be to contend for anything meaningful. In the secondary, obviously, they're lacking some talent right now, and it could use a boost there. And then, as I said, you know, the Washington game, I really did not like the defensive plan there. I thought that was a bad job by their coaches. And you know, when you look at their same weaknesses, just these two games, Washington, Minnesota, back to back, they've been getting killed the exact same ways. You know, the pass rush has just disappeared into thin air. And they're getting thrown all over. You know, no matter who's guarding who, no matter what alignment or assignment they have out there, they're getting the ball thrown on them all the time. And those are some things we saw last year, you know. So when you see consistent errors or consistent weaknesses across two seasons or just this two-game sample size, you have to put that back on coaching. So I don't believe, you know, as I said, I don't like their talent in the back end, but I don't believe they're the worst group of defensive backs in the nation, and yet they finished dead last in the nation last year. So obviously, I think that speaks to coaching as well. I don't think they're dumb or bad coaches, but I do think that maybe they can get a little too complacent in sort of what they're calling or what they're teaching. I do think there's more, as I mentioned earlier in the segment, there's more buttons they can push, I want to say, especially on that side of the ball.
And listening to what you say, how does that bode for a road game at Maryland this week?
Yeah. I think it's got to be real scary, because what's Michigan State been worst at? Defending the pass. What's Maryland do best? They can throw it on you, you know, a lot. They got an experienced quarterback in Talia Tagovailoa and two NFL receivers, in my opinion, in Rakeem Jarrett and Dante Demas. So it's, on paper, basically the worst matchup, you know, outside of Ohio State, of course, you know, that Michigan State could really hope for right now. I mean, I think... And that's the scary thing, right? Because Minnesota came in as a ground-and-pound team. They don't throw it. They didn't throw it over 20 times all year. And so you kind of thought, like, okay, maybe they can just get back to their bread-and-butter stuff in the run and get some confidence back here. And, oh, what happened? Minnesota comes out throwing the ball on them, has a tremendous success doing it. Tanner Morgan only misses three passes out of 26 the entire afternoon. And so, you know, if that sort of team that's built to run the ball can change their spots and throw it on you, what's a team that's built to throw the ball going to be able to do it to you? So I think it's absolutely a scary, scary matchup for Michigan State. But I also think it's a game that they've got to try to buckle down and almost have to win when you look at the rest of October, because that thing could spiral quickly. You got Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan in their next three games after that, and I don't like them in any of those games right now, to be honest. So I think this is the one you got to get to avoid a real scary spiral here for the program.
Just looking at you know, the offensive deficiencies and the defensive deficiencies, which are, you know, they're out there, they're obvious. On the offensive side for Michigan State, you know, I'm guilty. I hyped him up in the offseason. It's Peyton Thorne. I know the running game hasn't been there for him. How important is it for him to get back on track? I mean, he looks, I don't know if off is even the right word to describe Peyton's play so far.
Yeah, very important. You know, and I thought he was doing that. The first two games, you know, really the whole season he hasn't been very sharp. But the first two games, I thought he had a nice bounce back, especially at Washington, and especially the second half of that game. And now, look, I get the score was out of hand, and Washington might have let their guard down a little bit. But especially that second half, he had some decent moments. And then, you know, sort of reverted back again against Minnesota and didn't have a great day and, you know, coughed up the ball a couple times. So he has not had the year that I thought. But also, you know, I did think that a lot of people were putting the cart before the horse with Peyton Thorne. When you look back to last year, you know, of course he shared the backfield with Kenneth Walker and all the benefits that came with that. But if you look back, the games were kind of the few times, you know, that Kenneth Walker wasn't being an All-American, like the Indiana game or obviously the Peach Bowl where he just didn't play, or Ohio State where he didn't play in the second half. There were moments in that, you know, Nebraska for part of that game they had him bottled up. In stretches of games or full games where Kenneth Walker wasn't there or wasn't being the dominant force, Peyton Thorne did not step forward and pick up the baton, you know, and lead the passing game to fill that void. He struggled, you know, and then so much of his success last year came off of play action because Kenneth Walker was so good. So I think a lot of people assumed he would take this next step and be this difference-making, you know, second, third team, all Big Ten type of quarterback, and that obviously hasn't happened at all. So that's obviously a major thing. And I will say that I think it's hard to play quarterback when you have no run game, and I don't think he's trusting his protection very much right now. You know, I think there's a lot going wrong with that offense, just sort of at the root, you know, that's not allowing him to get comfortable and play in rhythm and whatnot. And look, he's also taken a bunch of hits this year. I think he might be a little bit in midseason form in terms of the bumps and bruises as well. But yeah, it's hard to play quarterback, hard to be an offensive coordinator when you can't call just the most basic elementary run plays and expect to get even 2 to 3 yards on a consistent basis. I mean, that's a hard deal to be in, and that falls back to the offensive line.
Well, I'm certainly the guilty party of putting the cart before the horse with Peyton Thorne. Very optimistic. We'll see a tough one with Maryland this weekend. We've been talking with Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports. Hey, it's great to talk Spartans, and it was great to talk to you. We appreciate it, and we hope to make this a regular thing.
Sure, yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, you too. Thanks, Stephen.
Absolutely.
All right, so there you go. A little Michigan State talk here inside the cave. How about that for a curveball? Happy to talk to Steven with 24/7 Sports. We'll try to get that on next week after a game that'll be played against Maryland. Not too optimistic about that, but we shall see.